then if you guys are also already doing all this action that people have come from home, that in terms of driving over the people continue to do so. Then scheduled for the 29th of August. That has been appointed. So they just know my matter as well. But obviously once the commissioner requires work with some matter, we will have a deeper look at the final of the business of inquiry and to go on there to all see what it is that together with the cost and then to make sure that we have to do this Then we're going to start with the proper licenses. Now there is a 12:30 training session in Parliament on the round of nominations. So we are doing this time. So we are going to also have our general license as well. But we just not like to through this whole document yet again. We've been through this document two or three times already. But they speak on the narrative that we take us through those, but that was the request of the committee in any case, but we need more information around the people that are of the proclamation rather than the process that is involved. So we're busy with the delegation on such and such. There are a few weeks, Mr. Hannah, over to you, then we can leave it. For this session, introduce the team that's going to be with this session, we'll get to your session, we will allow you again to serve the
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and good morning to the members of them. Firstly, Honourable Chair, just apology for the National Commission. Unfortunately, the people were expecting that you referred to the nomination, and the President has just given an apology. With that, myself, legal service thereafter, and Phil Mahadi also from the legal service thereafter, will be the first person. As you indicated, how good we will then be the rest of the delegation. And also, Phil Mahadi next to me. Thank you.
Attention. Please give me your attention. It's going to take us a minute to go through it. So, you know, move up to the drawing, because you have a few things you can be adding things to cause the same pleasure for.
Okay, thanks very much for the welcome. To allow me to release the team, and then from there we will team up with one of our team to give a presentation. The first person is my name, Makahata. She is the Digital Lunches Commissioner, responsible for DCI for the whole of it, commonly known. The information of Steve Jacob, not the same one as the Digital Lunches Commissioner, he's the Digital Lunches Commissioner, responsible for all the operational issues in the department. Brian Demasope, the Digital Lunches Commissioner, responsible for crime detection, attendance and mediation. Brigadier Helzon, Commissioner for Organizational Development. And I'd like to introduce himself on stage for the next one, because he's part of the community church. He's always here, thanks very much. We will, after the presentation, you will understand, that a lot of information is very sensitive of nature, that you can't discuss on an open public platform. If there's any questions of that nature, we will also contact you right into the committee, so that we just can look at our operations and take them and we can do it in the case. I want to be there to the next to our after the presentation, and after the presentation. Four types of gangs that we have in the culture space. common gang, what is it, Chinese based gang, specifically what they have done, coming to advertise, and all the other heavens, and yes, and the whole population of advertise, but a lot of activity involved in the advertising and the network. When in this action group, in coming to the other part, they will normally, apart every time, there's a conversion of the group, and how they go out. And for example, social relations within three areas, three different people, hundreds of units within only thousands of jobs. But they don't need to do more than that. This is in Nigeria, the public at the same level as the other cities. And then the East Korean gang, and we find that they are grouping all the operators, some of them can, as we know, but obviously at a higher end, at a certain types of gang. So we now understand of where, of how people can become gang phenomenon. The process is, so, in prior to the internet, part of the dynamic between the gang government, specifically the people who are the people who are called the government, commonly part of the government, which has been gang. But obviously, it has no longer so, the dynamic between gangs and then crossover happens between where the drugs come from, the supply of drugs, and the distribution of that, and then the payment. So that's a particular. So first of all, indicate that they allow gangs to stop the supply to these gangs that are paid. So it's crossover, these are athletes dynamically. But then look at that data item, that's what it is the whole time, but it's not completely necessary controlled by the gang. And the gang is that gang has only a portion of that. And the gang is not only about that, they have a lot of that as well. And that's important. So if you look at the other point, you may have a couple of things about that. There's a number of other relationships between crime, criminal groups and gangs. And the way that the criminal groups come, that group of people, especially for the health care again, don't have a name, but they involve in all these involved, and the firearms they have, and they have a dream or covered or stolen or robbed within those criminal gangs, so that's the issue as well. About the gang from the office to office, for murder, attempted murder, have a lot of resources involved in drugs, the phone to deal with, at street level, and the situation of the entire vendor now, and then we can see the last year, 3 months, we can see a lot more gangs involved in what we feel like, certain robberies,
manipulation by common gang leaders. Operations can specifically put your gang and act as a and then using dedication. But using the tips to make the layout come within and for the just classification track out this planting and then track it. Together, both very active and proactive. Maybe, I think over time, this will rain here, we will, we should have impact over time. So, seems like I've indicated early enough that we've got a partnership approach. Because in a range of the areas in the strategy we identified, that we need other departments, other organizations and communities to be involved. That would be the social crime prevention area, so that would mean community awareness programs, involvement of neighbors and mobilization that come about. Providing alternative social development programs to youth, that would be that they would involve social development efforts as departments and where there are existing organizations operating to partner with them to be able to conduct regular sessions at school, artists and these have happened because also they where the early recruiting areas, engagement with other departments such as social development, education, sports, city of Cape Town, their law enforcement, Metro City and LA, and also their building areas with their housing departments, where the gangs are predominantly, the Cape Town gangs are living in the city of Able Stock, predominantly. So, as part of the partnership, we identify where they are and begin to work on them. And then obviously, CAR, financial intelligence, is that CAR will deal with the bank governance. Many people who are unemployed, the basic accident. And you must know CARs and money, and CAR, somebody who is working with them on some of those areas as well. I think that's it. These are just a bit more detail of what to do at the time. Law enforcement. I think situational prevention work is to ensure that you have city cameras in some of those kind of spots and engage in city because you don't see the gang that you have those facilities now. We don't have any one or two main roads upload and in native places like not in the Dunham Leo, not in the Nova Park, not in the Alcatraz of a Martinship later. So those are some of our that will help the situational issues. Improving the lighting in the areas. Looking at this layout, how that works, where pedestrians must walk the most. I think that will help us to improve to at least use the areas of where they battle if they do. Thank you. And then community mobilization, I think this part is key. That is the layers of how the community that can be mobilized and is mobilizing work, construction work, and through. Through other, it's not just a work in progress, we are not completely in the area, currently we work for NGOs that in particular areas. Then there's community structures that have emerged themselves, the civic organizations, the neighbors, what is that we would want to work in with, and then the business sector. And that is key to our area. Because businesses itself are also, in those kind of areas, are also because of other crime. So we work with them, they have their interest to ensure that they, for example, put up CCTV cameras in and around their areas, back in terms of what they indicate that people hanging around the corners, and together we can work on it, we can remove them from those corners, and actually this would come, that would be part of our areas. And obviously, intergovernmental cooperation, intergovernmental partnerships, in order to mobilize for more active work. And I mean, it's just mentioned that it's the cooperative government, to make sure that all levels of government actually work together to ensure that we need that. It's not only the partners, but all partners that actually represent that sector. And then to ensure that our assessment, that our plans are aligned. Because it does happen from time to time that we find that different parts of government have plans that are not necessarily aligned. Part of our challenge now and the work that we're doing now is to look at all those plans and begin to see if we can ensure that we pull them together so there's synergy between. And in the budget, they see how the budget can get with it. And probably our system is that probably a lack of careful monitoring overall is not the police responsibility. That's right. These are just all our partners within government and within other areas as well. Then, as one of the parts of our strategy, we indicated to prevent or reduce the propensity of criminal corruption and to break. Part of that is for we have what's called another register where we identify people need for areas that we know that obviously are interest gangs of our profits, our firearms in our evidence stores, and that we monitor it clearly. years in the use of firearms in our stores was speeded up. And that will ensure the structure of those firearms in their public, the customs ability to ensure that it uses firearms in the market, for example. I think that's one of the interruptions. Perhaps we have a provincial one, but that we ensure that we can thrive that one. Then we have focused investigation mode, from the world class investigation potentially, and then from provincial detectives that specifically will pick up one single corruption that is investigated to ensure that it's a real investigation. And if it's only had one incident to prevent it from growing further. And if we have, key for us in this whole thing is what we call compliance inspection. If we can ensure that we need to handle and understand all this, then we'll be able to deal with other issues as well. A lot more people. That's part of our ongoing. So our standby, we have standby team every week. Daylight, every provincial commissioner and team, and we do patients from inspecting firearms on duty to see that all the bullets are there, to see if the issues, where's your other members. That compliance inspection helps us to reduce, and also to check the members' names, because people are saying members are. That way we can ensure that in this stage when we check the ships, they were on duty, they firearms are there, the bullets that they have, and even though it's fine, checking the bullets are bullets that we issue. In that way we can ensure that the compliance continues. And that we, and that reduces in our view, the risk areas, or the areas we have to the cost share.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm going to hand over to the Section 2 of Police to interview her team and for them to make their presentation, and then after we will open for questions. So, Melis, can I just 1 second before you start? I see the Honourable Nation's got his hand up.
Chairperson, since I requested to be excused and left, I have a little bit of questions to the presentation.
I'm pretty sure the Secretary of Police is going to be done before 11. In fact, they should be done within 20 minutes. So I would give the first question to yourself and allow them to answer that question as well.
Thanks, Chair, other members. As you will be aware, I'm Jenny Alex Kamboshiani, the Deputy Chair of Police. On my left is Ms. Bilkis Omar, who is the head of our policy and research unit. Behind me is Mr. Mark Rogers, who is director of the Policy Research Unit, who will be responsible for the presentation and is responsible for doing an assessment of our process again. And next in is Dr. Fatima Ghani from the Policy Research Unit. So I'll hand over to Mr. Rogers, who will be doing the presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. As the Secretary has indicated from the Secretariat, by the conducted a brief research exercise just to get a better understanding of the gang situation in the Western Cape. A lot of what General Jacobs has alluded to has already, or at least will come out in the presentation that you'll see at the moment. That just gives a brief indication of the presentation. I'm not going to go through all of those points. I think we can move to the next slide. Briefly, as an introduction, I think we've all accepted that gangsterism has a very specific history and pathology in the Western Cape. It's not new to South Africa and the Western Cape specifically. In terms of the history of gangsterism, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but you know, the forced removal from the district, etc., left you know, groups of people on the deprived areas, and that's partly. You know, the that informs the understanding of gangsterism and some of the social and economic conditions that created or gave rise to some of the conditions that created the flourishing of gangsterism in the province and on the Cape Town specifically. Over the years, gangsterism has become a lot more organized, sophisticated. It has evolved from the early days where gangs were involved in wholesale dealing in illegal smuggling of alcohol and full-scale violence. This is what we see today. Also, as General Jacob did indicate, some of the primary drivers of the gang conflict that we see currently has been to control and gain control of this and also market share because of the lucrative drug trade. And that has contributed to the protracted periods of environment conflict that we have seen over the last period. And I think we can't ignore the devastating impact that that has had on the communities where that has taken place. I mentioned that the history, so I'm not going to deal with that point. Again, the growth in gangsterism has largely emanated or created the formation of two types of gangs, your street gangs and your more organized structures. There is that close relationship or link with the prison gangs, the gangs on the outside, the gangs, your street gang operating as their foot soldiers, with more structured organized gangs keeping these street gangs in check, the street gangs generally being used to sell drugs, etc. for the more organized ones. I think what is important to take note of is that there are very distinct differences in terms of organization and structure of the gangs that you have in South Africa as opposed to those that we find internationally. And I think that would obviously inform the approaches that we use in terms of how we address gangsterism broadly. Some of these differences would be the hierarchical structures, strict measures of enforcement and regulation, and that all contributes to the order nature of operations. While gangsterism has largely become entrenched on the mainland, we have recently seen the shift of this phenomenon into other communities like Kinyanga and Khayelitsha, where previously, you know, the phenomenon hasn't been experienced, and we've seen these communities finding it really difficult to, first of all, understand this concept and then obviously grapple with how to deal with it because it's something that is all new to them. Over the years, there have been various strategies and initiatives that have been implemented by both us and other role players, both communities, etc., in an attempt to deal with the problem that we find in the province. While a measure of success has been achieved, you know, we can see that in terms of the loss in the environment of others that we've had. Recently, if we look at statistics released by CAP for the 2010-2011 financial year, we see a total of 70,588 drug-related crimes recorded for the Western Cape alone. Now, that figure accounts for more than half of the total drug-related crimes recorded for the country. So I think that puts it into perspective the nature and extent of the drug problem and how that needs to be dealt with. Recently, we've seen that the escalation of the gang violence has in part been driven by competitions relating to methamphetamine or the street name TIC. That is primarily some of the indications of that because TIC has just become so easy to manufacture, you're finding increasing that gangs are beginning to manufacture their own products, and that leads to prices being undercut, market share, etc. And those are some of the drivers that have been fueling some of the competition and leading to the increased violence that we've seen. Since 2011, because of the escalation in the violence, we've seen strong response being put forward by a broad range of stakeholders to deal with this problem. In terms of the approaches that SAP has taken, there's been a more focused approach in terms of addressing it, in terms of the vast interrelated factors that contribute to the phenomenon. Again, General Jacob did allude to some of them, you know, the relationship between your firearms, your drugs, those 3 points indicate some of the measures that have been taken in terms of, you know, how SAP has tried to deal with the problem today, apprehending suspects, linking to gang activity, confiscating illegal firearms, etc., and tracking down the source of these firearms. In terms of the recommendations that we would like to support in terms of how gangsterism should be dealt with, I think we all accept that there is a plethora of issues that construct the communities of the Western Cape, your social, your economic, your environmental conditions. And I think prior to that, the organized nature of gangsterism means that it has to be dealt with firstly through a range of activities and in a coordinated, integrated manner involving a range of stakeholders. The starting point obviously would be a coherent criminal justice response so that acts of violence can be systematically reduced and sustained. Again, the inextricable links of gangsterism to activities such as illegal firearms, illicit drugs, abalone, prostitution. I think it just reinforces the need for that coordinated criminal justice response. And I think the fact that there are links to the legal businesses as well further reinforces and forces that approach that needs to be done. Then obviously we have the view that that will provide a credible starting point, you know, credible policing approach for a long-term approach to dealing with gangsterism. The approach should look, I think, in the long term at destabilizing the criminal networks and enterprises. This should be informed largely by a strong intelligence gathering phase, intelligence leading that will inform better decisions. And then obviously the presence of early warning systems coupled with other data analysis, I think that would greatly enhance the process. Just in terms of the benefits of criminal investigations, linkage analysis could be strengthened, increasing likelihood of connecting perpetrators to multiple incidents, ability to apprehend suspects, signs of gang activity will be improved, a chance of security convictions with some of the cases being presented at court. And obviously, the link to this would be proper crime management and helping that, contributing to the investigation process. You know, actually, I think in order to ensure that those processes run properly, detectives need to ensure, or a process needs to be put in place to ensure that detectives get the right kind of training and support, particularly because of the complex nature of these crimes, to understand the various elements of the organized nature of gangsterism. And just in conclusion, we say that dealing with gangsterism requires a long-term investment, focusing on strategies dealing with the social, economic, and environmental factors. It needs a deeper understanding of the root causes and social contradictions of the gang problem. In terms of those social contradictions, again, it was alluded to in the previous presentation, gangs at some level, all day, avoid to an extent in certain communities and sometimes provide functions that in a way should be provided by the state, you know, providing recreational facilities, and that creates a really interesting dynamic in terms of how communities respond to gangs. So I think that needs to be understood as well. That must work in a coordinated and integrated manner with a wide range of actors, stakeholders, other government departments, NGOs, particularly communities. I think the last point is particularly important, securing the buy-in of communities that will generate the critical mass needed to begin to change mindsets towards gangsterism from within those communities.
Thank you very much. Members might just say that, and that's how we can crumble, that the presentation that we have in copies for us is full of mistakes. It's been enough. The copying itself. They've stated it together with the previous presentation, and only a few pages are given instruction that they can copy it back. And the reason why I say that's the way Cookie Crumbles is, it reminded me about the fact that the Secretariat's presentation was linked. And I did have a discussion with the Secretary of Police on this. And for the record, it will be the last time that we accept a presentation, and I'm serious about this, officers, the Secretariat is arriving late. The next time it happens, we will completely tell you to turn around and go back. It does not give us an opportunity to prepare properly for a meeting if presentations are late. Members, we are going to get the full presentation. The committee assistant is busy doing that now. We open for questions. I would like to start with the honourable measures question, and then I would ask the committee to indulge, give the department as well as the Secretariat an opportunity to respond to honourable measures question, and then we will continue with questions after that. Honourable measures.
Thank you, Chair President. I must say that the presentation was disappointing to me, particularly when I get the quality strategy of how to deal with gangsterism. The strategy does not show anything that will lead to finally eradicating gangsterism and proliferation of blacks in the country. The devastating impact that both gangsterism and grants are heading on our committee. And I think more needs to be done than what has been presented. So the direct question I want to ask the police is whether there is a will to eradicate imperialism. To hear that the imperialism is entrenched is disappointing, because we know that there are people who lose their lives, there are people who live in fear. Now, are we told that we must be prepared to live forever with gangsters and drugs? And when people refer to the living conditions of our people, I would be quick to say there are countries such as Lesotho that are much poorer than South Africa, and yet they do not have gangsters as we have in the country. Now, to respond to the main file and go to the secretary, there have been allegations that one of the reasons the police cannot eradicate proliferation of drugs is because there are some police men and women who are on the payroll of drug dealers. A few weeks ago, I was in Kudaro. A policeman in the city center has a gentleman leaning against the door and talking to the police inside. And the person that accompanied me says, "You see that man talking to the police and leaning against the door of the policeman? That man is paying for second fee." Now, these gangsters are known. Drug dealers are known. How to get these drugs are sold are known. And yet, the impression we get is nothing done about it. A few years ago, when Jerry Selebi was still the commissioner, I asked him a question about why they are unable to eradicate drugs. He said that these drug dealers are smart. They have CCTV cameras all over. That when the police want to search, they see from these cameras and they hide the drugs. I said, but are they not sniff a dog that can go into those houses to sniff every dress that he did? So, Chairperson, I'm sorry to say, I'm not convinced that there is a will to eradicate gangsterism in the country. That is causing many of our people to live in fear. Many innocent people and children to lose their lives. Drugs that are destroying the future of our children. Now, in Krugersdorp, when I was shown this police van with a drug dealer paying protection fee. I had just come from a rehabilitation center that deals with children as young as 9 who are addicted. And now, if children as young as 9 are addicted, and we have police, we have intelligence, are they failing? I mean, if they say we can't, let them just be honest that we can't. So, I just want to ask the question, General Lamour, I direct to you and your team. Do the police have the will to eradicate gangsterism and drugs and proliferation of drugs? And then maybe to, as a secretariat, my question to you, why don't you come up or recommend a policy that would make membership of a gang illegal? Because nothing said about it. Thank you.
I'm going to give the department an opportunity to respond to that question. I think the Honourable Meshu has now acted like a noxious member, but using this opportunity to ask his question before we can leave. But I'm going to nonetheless allow the department to respond to the question, secretariat to respond, and then we're going to continue with questions. So we'll excuse Honourable Meshu then.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Firstly, the presentation that was given, it's a very high level presentation. It's not just, we didn't go into the detail. Because a lot of the detail is operational information that we can't discuss in an open forum as I started off by saying. There is a proper strategy in place, and in the confines of this room, without the eyes of the media, we will be able to take you through the whole strategy. I think that is what's important. Because you must understand, for me to go and explain my strategy here, then I have to go back and read Well, a member tried to smuggle drugs in one of the police cells. He was arrested by the Vatican Police Service members. He's convicted, but he will be convicted and he will be part of the service. And let's consider the example that we do that. So, yet the will to fight against the drugs is there from the service members because we do have a constitutional responsibility to do that. But we need also to be face the reality by saying the law enforcement part of fighting drugs and gangsterism is our responsibility. But that is not the only way of eradicating our society from drugs and gangsters. Addiction comes not from the, from law enforcement, but addiction comes from people that really go, as long as they supply and demand, we will continue having this problem. From our side, yes, the commitment is there, honorable member. And we know, for instance, every week, non-drug houses have been visited and searched by members of the Western Cape Police Service. We do it on a regular basis. That's why you will see the increase of confiscation over the last 2 years in this province. And that is the reason why we also have to say to you, honorable member, is that the cooperation with community structures very, very positive and it increases continuously. We go out to communities, have our individuals, small individuals with space in specific areas, and then members of the community come forward. So we're building that trust and we're building that cooperation with the communities on a continuous basis. So, in conclusion, yes, we have a detailed strategy to deal with the problem. Yes, the commitment to fight gangsterism and drugs in this province is there. And also, just to give an example, the week past, we confiscated over 50 firearms alone, the way we do our operations in this province. So clearly, as you can see, the world is there. And even about allegations of corruption, we are dealing with this on a continuous basis. Crime intelligence are involved, undercover operations are involved, we deal with our members and we suspend them and dismiss them as soon as we have the evidence to do that. Thank you, Chair.
I'll ask Roger to ask the last question. I just want to make a couple of comments, and I think that we need to constantly be striving to deal with the gang problem and the drug problem. But we also need to recognize that there isn't going to be a magic wand to deal with this. I guess the honourable member is saying about the CTF, and I think what we're saying is it's not just economic. There are a whole lot of social, economic, historical factors that have led to the situation that we're in now. Last year, I attended an extended V8 meeting of officials, specifically on drug trafficking. I think there were 24 different or 28 different countries from around the world, all of whom were identifying drug trafficking and the issue of drugs as a national security threat to their country. So it isn't, and I think one of the things that came out very strongly from that extended V8 meeting and the declaration that was subsequently signed by our principals 2 weeks later, was that we need to deal with the issue of drugs on a range of different fronts. One is we need to recognize the organized nature of it. We need to improve the criminal justice system, but we also need to look at consumption of drugs and how we are dealing with the consumption of drugs. So on the one hand, yes, as police, it is important that there is a very comprehensive strategy to deal with gangs and drug violence. But on the other hand, we also need to recognize that we need to go beyond the police and we need to also be able to start looking at what are the factors that contribute to consumption and that we need to deal with both the markets and even the trafficking routes, etc., so that it also gets dealt with at an international level in terms of the trafficking routes, local gang and drug problems and organized crime and at the level of consumption. To the drug problem, but I'll just ask Mr. Rogers to just deal with your question on the legality.
Thanks, Honourable Member. In terms of the questions relating to if any policy can be put forward, I think what needs to be taken into consideration is that the Prevention of Organised Crime Act does make substantial provision for activities relating to gang membership, gang activity, and I think the provisions in the Act just need to be, I think, probably enforced a lot more harshly because there are strict provisions that are
Bartling, Honorable Kuna was to be on the Tumi, Honorable Kuna Barnard.
Madam Chair, I must say, I am like Reverend Shaman. I've heard General Samuel explain, but I'm very disappointed with this presentation. I'll tell you why. Some few years ago, I checked this comment. When they came back, we're discussing the same thing, presented exactly what they're presenting. Or if you need not there. But one of the things that you have not mentioned, because there are many things you have not mentioned, one of the things you have not mentioned is that recently there has been a call for the involvement of the Mishas in Hitler. Surely it does not come from the air. You don't tell us why. Of course, now this new excuse that can't tell us because there's media. Now, the leader told us that, and it's still happening, that in fact some gang leaders have become role models in the cage class. People go to them, they give things like, you know, if somebody dies, they help you very happy. That gang leader. He said at that time, he was very, in fact that day we were very, very happy because something he said, we know even the mastermind. But if you look at what you're presenting exactly what he told us. So many, you know, I was police, then I went to defense, I left and I'm back. It's the same thing. You see, you talk about to disclose and terminate within the capacity of gangs operating. But not, this is what we're told. But up to now, I don't see, it looks like from what was picked up in the media, that the gang has been in the case plan. So then you say, you know, fight over that. That's what we're told. Why is that possible? And why the question is, right? Are you really willing to deal with it? It's good to say we're willing. Anybody can say that. I've heard that people say we're willing. But are you really willing?
So, can I also get to your question?
Yes. So, you make it this. Western case, you're going to go to the there, probably there is nothing to show, you can't see anything. But, Eastern case is far poorer than Western case. We don't have these gangs, and you're not going to tell you because they are pure colors in the case. But I'm not going to buy that and that colors by nature of it and left because there's no such thing. I don't know about the reason. But what I'm saying is the involvement of the police. But the question to you, how prevalent is this involvement of the police? It's nice for you to say we arrested one policeman. How about me? Current justice system, you said. How do you think it's been like that? It's like getting worse. How do you hope if you were relying on this thing? Is there no plan? You see, the thing you say is this plan of yours is a secret that you can't tell us. Or you can't tell us what we need. Because the truth of the matter, you have not told us. You gave us all the history. We know about the things of the 28, all we know about those things. We know all things we need to give us about. Because it is inside us, even at that time, they can see the study. What we are interested in now, which to us is important, how do you make sure that gangsterism means is reduced? At least as people of the hate flesh can say, we live like all other South Africans in the country.
Because I do think I think if we want a presentation on a detailed strategy, operational strategy, then this committee needs to take a decision to have a vote meeting. So I want to write that. With that, I'm not ruling out if we don't have such a meeting. It's up to the committee to decide who they want. But I do think we need to reflect the fact, as it was explain to us that detailed strategy aren't given here to support something undermine the strategy itself. That's a decision for the committee to take. We might disagree with that, George, but I think we need to respect that. We might find after that reason that we don't agree and say, no, it was meant to be, you could open that. But that is the reality of the matter. Honourable Morwasi, and then Honourable Funeval, can I please ask members to ask questions so that we can get answers so that we can ask follow up questions?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Mr. Presenter. My question is, in this place where school members are part of this game, do you get cooperation from the principals and the staff trying to go away? My second question is, in this sector politician, what are the activities of the neighborhood watches? My third one is, in the past, gangsterism was very common in colored areas. But now, simply, it has spread to black areas, black townships. And this tells you the mentality. If not, we need the right.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I went through these presentations last night, and I want to say to the police that the Secretariat is telling you that you are losing the war against the gangsters. And the reason why I say that is, of course, firstly, and I understand, I don't want to hear the operational plan and everything like that. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter what your operational plan is, if your broad principles are not correct, you can't have effective operational plans. The intelligence issue, the Secretariat is telling you that you don't have enough intelligence. You yourself, in a certain sense, say that it's a problem. Now, for me, that is the essence. Because when you deal with a criminal problem like this, gangsters, you must have very good intelligence to ensure that you are successful. You're coming here and you're telling us that there are social problems. That is true. Any criminal activity is actually a social problem. So that does not solve the problem. You don't have the trust of the community. You say you are vulnerizing the community. We have people negligently alleged criminals in Kailicha. They are headless because the community says they don't have any trust in the police. Now you explain that. So, my question is, what are you going to do to improve the intelligence as such? And those kind of pretty good theoretical principles and all that sort of thing. I want to know in practice what you are going to do. Because I can assure you, if you're not going to do something on the ground level, as far as that is concerned, the gangsters are going to become more, and the problem will be then resolved by the police. So you are losing the war against the gangsters. How are you going to do that? Thank you.
The issue of Kailisha and Yang. So, but do you know that that the terrorism as from the state level are being organized? What is difficult to go there and deal with those things that are sensitive? Because they are going to kill you as first.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the presenter. I think my question was first, but let me ask you the way I want it, I've seen that you have the stakeholders who are involved in the education department. But what I would like to find out from that in the partnership that before we go to the partnership or the stakeholders, what impact and what is the involvement of the
not to the Mandela first case in terms of terrorism. What is their involvement and what impact does that have? Chairperson, why am I asking this? And before I tell the people why I'm asking this, in terms of your stakeholders, I would like to suggest or propose that you involve the student movement as well. Contact the attitude. We had incidents of gang terrorism in the area where I come from, in Winchester in particular, yesterday. And the incident started on last week Wednesday. And yesterday we were alerted by the students and by the court. We went to school, communicated with the PC, called in, someone the station commander to go and assess the situation. As we were standing at the meeting the first part of yesterday, the incident of gang terrorism were taking place or happening in another school. That's why I want to know the interest and involvement of students, of learners. Learners, I mean, the high school and the primary school in Cape Town. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Given the national minister has declared this the year of the detective, and given that the gang and violent crime require dedicated capacity to investigate and gather intelligence, and that we know that the Western Cape detectives are dealing with, in some cases, more than five times the national norm of 120 dockets, what additional capacity are you looking at? What has been given to deal specifically with this issue of the gangs and the drug crimes? Then, how many detectives that you're using in this manner are focusing only on gangs and drugs? Are they also sidelined to look for the really non-gang related crimes, domestic violence and such? Is their focus being watered down in that way? Also, how many additional detectives added to your core have been added just to deal with gang terrorism? And then the issue of arrest, it's very big relief to hear that you see you're making the arrest, but how many of the so-called gang bosses have been arrested, have been prosecuted, have been convicted? I trust also when you said that when you found police who were somehow complicit with this, you said you would find them and dismiss them. I trust you would also arrest them. Didn't just chuck them out there. I wondered if there were any details of missing dockets in relation to these crimes specifically. Because of course that's a huge buying of dockets, the gun lords have the money and the police don't. And the dockets go out the door. Of course, we don't necessarily have dockets on any sort of system at this stage. It may not be a matter. Now, as the commissioner, there was a no to the Western Cape government's corporate specialised unit, and you advised the national minister that the Western Cape did not need specialised units. Then the president said no to the premier's request for the army to go to the gang affected areas, and yet the gang violence is continuing. 4 killed and 8 at the weekend, other than West Bank last week. So it seems to me, while the situation is at crisis level, and while the request for assistance from the SANDF and even specialized units were turned down, police have been brought in as a result of those requests. Extra police are in there, the police presence is up. Assured, nice follows that once they go again, the gangs will be back. They will reemerge and you'll have the same sort of situation. I cannot understand why you would reject the suggestion of specialized units. Everywhere in the world, when one has a specific issue, you create specialized units. Just because you actually select scrap somewhere doesn't mean that they're a bad thing. They allow one to deal holistically with an issue like this that really is costing lives on virtually a daily basis. So I want to know your reason for rejecting the establishment of specialized units in this manner. And yes, you're making the arrest, and that was good to hear that you've made some, but you know, it's really not quantity that counts, it's quality. So you can pick up 100 guys on street corner, and tomorrow there will be another 100 selling drugs. But if you get one boss, one gang boss, one syndicate boss, then you win. Then I'll applaud you. Don't come with numbers and say we've picked up hundreds and hundreds, or what, in 6 months we found a case of a few guns. That's not what it's about. It's about cutting the head off of the spider. And that's what you have to do. And the only way to do that is with, I know crime intelligence is in a disaster state. Nationwide. Okay, we have to accept that. It's not going to be a quick fix situation. But without the intelligence and the specialized unit, I don't know how you're going to beat this problem. And I think you need to sit back and refocus.
Before I allow the department and the secretary to respond, I also have a couple of questions that I would like to pose. First of all, I would like to know where the POCO legislation is adequate and whether there are room for improvement. POCO does not deal with gangs per se. They deal with organized crime, of which gangs is a part. But if you tell it's adequate, can it be strengthened so that it deals better with the gang-related issues as well? And if so, what type of improvements can be made? There are these so-called peace accords in the Western Cape that have been signed earlier this year by the very head of the spiders. And yet, since that, those signing of the peace accords, we've seen an increase in gang violence in the West Bank. Gang violence tends to be seasonal as well, and we've seen this flare of gang violence in the Western Cape at a time that it's normally not happening. Winter time is normally one of the more peaceful times. So I would like to have an explanation on how effective this is, this because what was achieved by the tying of the peace accord. Question about specialized units has been asked. I certainly am not necessarily in favor of specialized units insofar as gangsterisms is concerned, because of the fact that I know that previous research has indicated that gangs look at specialized units as just another gang, and the community look at them in the same way, and they then, because they're the small group that work with or within the gang violence, they then become that much easier to corrupt. So that was some of the experience. But I think it is important that you speak to us on specialized units so that we have an understanding of whether it's necessary or not necessary to have specialized units. The one thing that worries me about the presentation is not necessarily general the lack of ego. I think we as a committee have that right to call you back and say, let's have a meeting where we can discuss in confidence the detail. But what do worry, and I'm not necessarily blaming staff for this, but I do think something that the government as a whole needs to look at is coordination effort. I mean, there's a list of departments that should be involved. How often does one meeting take place where all of these departments are? And where the topic on the agenda is gas. Where we say, Department of Education, what are the alternatives that you're giving to children after school to keep themselves in with? Department of Sport, you're planning a new area, new development for low-cost housing. Are you planning recreational facilities to go with that? What are those recreational facilities? And I can carry on with each of these departments. Who is chairing that meeting? Is it happening? Because if it's happening, we're not seeing the consensus of it. I think you stand at the end of a process in many ways. There's a lot of things that happen in the development of gangs before it gets to the point of police. And what I'm trying to establish is whether this, you refer to the Constitution and the intergovernmental, the relations and everything. Is it happening? Because from where we sit, it's not happening. It's not bearing the fruit that it should be bearing. We've got a draft master plan that we don't know the success of or whether it's actually successful. We doubt that it is. So we need to get an understanding. Who is leading the movement? What monitoring is taking place? And what adjustments are made if monitoring actually do take place to say this is not working, let's do this. You talked about firearms in some certain schools, and you talk about compliance, and I'm glad to this because I agree with you, because I think that is one of the burning issues in your sub-30 schools. Not only firearms, it's also gasoline in your sub-30 schools. And it's also the fact that even in the Western Cape, you're not excluded from this, we still find that in your schools that shouldn't be in your schools. There's a national inspection that makes it quite clear anything but the harm that be out of schools being, I think it's 48 hours older or 24 hours old, that's been booked in. Compliance, nice to say they need to comply. You say you've got special teams that look at that as well. Question directly directed to the Prevention Commission. Commissioner, are you making sure that the compliance forms part of the performance agreements that you sign with your station commissioners? Because somehow somebody needs to start paying the price if there is non-compliance by such vendors. And it can only be done if that's how it's the constable or the warrant officer who's in charge of the store. It will only have effect if it is the management and the commands of a station or a government that does it. Are your days intelligence driven? You know, many of the members have raised the issue also of community involvement, of trust of community. And I think what is important is that one also look at the complaints that one receives from the community after these raids. That's why I'm asking whether it's intelligence driven. Members complain that traps go in there, they can't identify the traps member who has kicked down their door because they've got their bulletproof vest on, and on the bulletproof vest there's no identification, so they can't identify it. Are you, even after the raid, going back to the community and saying if you do have complaints, that is the processes you can go through? I think it's important. If we want to get the best of the community, we need to do that. Are we going back? Are we making sure that the wrong door does not keep being kicked down? And don't tell us it's not happening. We just need to look at your fund that you make provision for at a national level for claims against the police to know that it's actually happening. So how do we interact with the community after the raid? Because by the nature of the raid, we are going to affect innocent people as well. Are we going back? Are we saying to the community the day after, 2 days afterwards, this is why we've done that? This, if you've got a problem, if you were affected wrongly by this, yeah, and I'm the state commissioner, come lay your charges, lay your complaints. If you did break down the door, why wait for a court case to fix the door? Why not fix the door so that we don't have a relationship? The issue of police involvement, I think it is an important issue, and you've touched on it. I think it's a very important question that was asked, because we often hear that police officers, when they get caught, they get fired, they get suspended, or whatever case. What we are interested in is not that internal process. The criminal charging of police officers, making examples of those police officers who are acting criminal, so that others can see what the consequences. What guarantees are there that you are actually doing that? I think if you can answer these questions that we pose to you now. Okay, T is ready. Our time is 10 past 11. We will be back here 20 past 11. Then we want to start answering the questions. And then we'll get to the I am going to ask that we allow the department to answer questions, make note of your follow-up questions, so that we can then ask follow-up questions. Following the answer, I've listed all the questions, and we'll try and see, make sure that everything is answered. Over to the department, the General Mood, Secretary of Police, I presume you have divided the questions and that you will respond, so if we can start, please.
Thank you. I will ask the secretary to respond, and then I will follow.
certain areas like intelligence, detection, etc., and we're working with the policemen. So I would like to avoid the temptation of looking at the two presentations as completely different than the one presentation being critical of the other, because that is certainly not the case at all. But I also want to raise a general point before I get on to the specialized unit specifically. And I think it would be very valuable to supply the committee with the UN OCD report on gun terrorism and drugs internationally. It's just been a recent report released by the United Nations, which indicates that this is not unique to South Africa, it's an international problem. And in fact, it points to some of the initiatives that we are looking at. And I don't have the exact figures, but I can provide the committee with the figures. The recent small arms survey looks at the excessive number of weapons, and I think it was an excess of 2 million weapons, that are in the hands of gangs internationally, and highlights that as a crucial issue that we need to be addressing, is removing the weapons from gangs. And I think there has been, responding to Honourable Deputy Zink, that we need to look at this gang problem in a holistic manner. We need to look at the organised crime nature, the international links, internet, where some of the drugs are coming from, and that is why through Interpol, through our international work with the United Nations, G8, etc., we're addressing that. But you also need to look at certain policing aspects, we've highlighted that in our presentation. But then we also need to look at the consumption of drugs, and I think Arthur Nehmer has referred to the master plan and the need to look at it at a coordinated level, and a coordinated level not just between national government departments, but also between all government departments. I mean, if one looks at the gang problems in the Western Cape specifically, and they're not necessarily unique to the West Cape, finding gangs are beginning to strengthen into other areas in the country, etc. And it's not just that they are spreading to areas like Kaili, it's also been based along the profile from the Western Cape, etc. And I think that with the international increase in the drug problem, we are also seeing the impact of that. But we also need to look at it. If one looks at the research, for example, in some areas you find that some of the gangs, etc., almost have a kind of alternative authority to local government. And so we need to be involving local government, etc., in the process, not just the national department, but we need to go right down to ensuring that we are engaged. And I think the Eastern point is not in the presentation, for example, into what role the local government, what is their mandate, what role can they play in this, because it also might undermine their authorities in different areas. With regard specifically to the specialized unit, the first point I want to make is that we do have a specialized unit in the UK. We have the DPDR, which has a very specific mandate to focus on corruption and organized crime. And if one looks at the presentation of facts and the research that we've done, even the research that we've done by the United Nations, the organized nature, the analogs, the drug trafficking, the kingpins that Martin was talking to, those are all very directly within the mandate of the DPCI and of the investigations of the DPCI. And I think that is precisely why the head of the DPCI and the West Cape is here now with the West Cape team, and could maybe talk about some of the successes, etc., in dealing with the kingpins with regard to this. I think it's incorrect to present a picture that we don't have specialized units that focus on this. We do have the DPCI, and if there's a need to contact the DPCI, then that is something that we need to address. I think we've made it very clear in our presentation and in the final report that we are working on the mechanism and the gang issue, is that we believe that the police do have the capacity, that we might need to strengthen certain areas of the police, but that the police do have the capacity to deal with it, but that peace alone can't deal with it. It needs to be dealt with it at a coordinated intergovernmental level involving local government, provincial government, national government, and different departments and different aspects. I'll then just ask Mr. Rogers to deal with the project issue as well as the issue of the peace of all.
for them to negotiate.
Thanks, Honourable Member. On your ability with the issues around the peace treaty that has been signed, just quickly, the context around the decision to involve that process, I think it was around October, November of 2011 when the peace treaty was signed with former gang members in the Western Cape as a way of dealing with the killings that were happening and the shootings that were happening. That has, I guess, drawn a strong amount of criticism. I think firstly, the 2 points were that you are negotiating with former gang members on a public platform, you know, in a public arena, and that kind of almost gives the impression that the activities are being legitimized in a way. I think the second aspect is that the concerns about the enforceability of these treaties with the I think particularly if we look at, I think it was roughly about 7 months after the peace treaty was signed, we had another play up in the violence, and I think that was in shock of it. Or how legitimate they are, really. I think some of the other points that we need to take into consideration is that, you know, in engaging in a process like that, you tend to be negotiating with the wrong people because they're former gang members. They no longer have, you know, what they call the deep set, you know, among the current gang members, and that often leads to tensions within existing gangs and then obviously with amongst other gangs. And that can create additional conditions for violence. You know, deals are sometimes broken with members who are not necessarily the most senior in the gang, and that probably also additionally creates tension and destabilizing effects on gangs, and that can serve as triggers for protracted periods of violence. And I think one of the fundamental points that is that peace agreements are being broken with people who should be arrested. Even though some of the members or individuals that claimed that they were former ex-gang members who had been reformed, there were allegations that some of those may have still currently been involved in illegal criminal activity. So, you know, that negotiation process seems flawed from that perspective. And then, I think, you know, the one issue that could also be mentioned is that there was a precedent created that in signing these peace agreements, these gangsters would almost have peace as well from concept, so that wouldn't be targeting them during these periods when the peace agreements are signed. And I think that is a situation that may never be allowed to prevail or to be accepted, because that has a duty and responsibility to police the situation and to apprehend subjects involved in ethnic criminality. So I think broadly those are some of the key points that, or criticisms that have been raised around the negotiation process with the peace treaties that have been signed. And again, I think that the fundamental point is, are these peace treaties enforceable? You know, will these gang members stick to them? Will hold them accountable to these peace treaties? In terms of the conquer question, Chapter 4 of the Act specifically makes provision for gang-related activities. Subsection 1, and subsection 2, specifically details, you know, if members become involved in gang-related activities, if they incite acts of violence, if they actively recruit members into the gang. All of those provisions are made in Section Chapter 4 of the Act, and then it does go on to provide penalties as well, for those related offences. So I think perhaps Chapter 4 of COVID needs to be looked at a lot more carefully and perhaps just strengthened as a way of dealing with gangsterism more broadly, because provision is also made for the organised crime element in terms of drug trafficking and money laundering. So I think it does at some level provide a holistic approach to dealing with what is technically a very complex and organised phenomenon.
Thank you, Venati. I think it's important to know that when the poker was dropped in 1998, the provisions relating to the gang was strictly inserted in fact on the quest of the Western Cape after that had sent it to the United States. At the present moment here, we are looking at the issue specifically with the certain seat of our police officers. As you would know, that the police itself doesn't really have power in terms of the process of crime and the mentality of crime. We have to do it in coordination with the National Prosecuting Authority. We've had a number of instances in some jurisdictions, especially Australia, where the police do have a limited power in that respect. And we've seen from the presentation made the very close relationship between organized crime itself and the gangster activities. So the one issue that we're following up with the asset forfeiture unit at the moment is for proper powers of abuse in terms of intelligence and processing of crime and not only respect of instruments. So that we can cover that aspect during investigation petition search incidents. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I will start by speaking on the corruption or the allegations of corruption. And I think it's important for us to understand, although I used the one example, there are many more, and I can keep this with you one step to give you the details, the numbers of the arrest, of the finalization of the criminal or the criminal process. We will be able to provide to the committee. That's what it's doing. I don't have the figures with me. The same issue with the eye flyers for the gang process, we can also apply that. But this on the issue briefly on with reference to the DCCR, there's going to be a case running called Guy Books for Bell that is dealt with by the DCCR. And they have a long list of charges against the gang boss that can be being dealt with by the DCCR. That is one of the examples that we need, and that's just one of the examples. The issue of corruption, I think it's also related to George, right? Another issue would be about members of staff working at police stations for years on end, recruited there and also been working there. And it's correct. Since I started here in 2010, I started in the process of cessation of mentors. I started with the court because that is one of our problems. People are being kept from court or not being smuggled into the court cell. So we started the process of reciting already, and I've already rallied it out to some of our police stations also. One thing that we didn't mention in our presentation is a project we call Project 23, where we identified 23 police stations with the highest number, or that contribute 50% of the crime in a Western Cape. More than 50% of the crime is perpetrated. The reason why we're doing that is exactly also to look at the staff. Project 23 police stations that contributed more than 50% of crime in the Western Cape. So what we're also looking at is that we look at staff establishment. And I can give you an example. We discovered the other day that at one police station, there's a member that worked for 28 years at one police station. So yes, that's why we visited the process of replacing a member, and I think that will inject to life into some of our police stations also. On the issue, I just want to make one comment on the issue of the fee freezing. South African Police Service is not involved in any fee talk between gangsters. That's our policy because we are there to arrest. We will never be involved in that. When it comes to the involvement of members, we will provide a committee with the convictions and the private event. The complaints or the interaction with the community after raid, after the challenge-driven operation. Yes, we started with that process, but we will improve going back to the community. And the minister was correct by saying, you don't need to wait. You don't need to wait for a civil claim in order to fix the door of the community member. There is provisions or instructions in our own curriculum that members need to record every act when they go into an operation, what happened. If they kick down the door, they would need to then have to go back and say, this is the process, give us your email, and we will then fix the specific issue, for example. So, yes, we will improve, and we're in the process of going more back and back to the community and say, this was the reason for the raid that has been taking place. Secondly, yes, raids, most of our raids are intelligence driven. But we
our members operate, they will receive information and they have to act immediately. So they will not be intelligence that will give us the information. Members have their own informants, members have their own contact in the community, they receive the information from colleagues in other provinces. For instance, to give you an example, in Bulgaria, the constant taxes in 1 week, 50 million rand worth of drugs on the buses that come into the capital. And that was not intelligence driven, that was a normal operation that we run for stopping and searching vehicles that are coming into the province. So a clear example of reduced rate. But some of the rates here, it's clear, it is intelligence driven, and we can improve on that one. The other point is about compliance with station commanders and the commanders or cluster commanders. What we currently do is at provincial management, our operational meetings, Madam Chair, is at the police station, no longer in the provincial office, where we ask station commanders, branch commanders, visible policing commanders to account for their performance at station level. That's what we speak of. That the report received at the provincial level is also not always accurate, because whoever wrote the report is just almost hearsay. And look at the performance. Some of our members get test performance of 3 out of 5. And when it starts interrogating them, we find that they really didn't perform that well. So that's why management, and I always say, management of the Western Cape does make the utmost control. We are there on the street, we work with our members, we visit our members. That's why the compliance of our prisoners is becoming much better. And our people from the inspectors also do this on a regular basis. We refer briefly to the issue of firearms and exhibits in exhibition stores. This is exactly what we do. We go out, we check, and if there's problems, we act immediately. Detectives that keep drug reports in the drawers, we act immediately to show that those things are not. But you must understand it's a process, and we deal with this on a continuous basis. The intergovernmental cooperation that you refer to, yes, there is structure. For instance, the prop joint is one of the structures that we deal with. But we must understand on the project is only the JKS cluster department that is present there. We include Metro Police in the province itself. But apart from that, there is also other structures that we interact with some of these other departments. There is private school project in the province where we interact with the Department of Education. And that means that principals and staff members cooperate with that. When we do rates at schools, we go through the process of the department and also of the principal. Sometimes principals request these rates. So there's good interaction from the principals. And also there's a truancy project that was run by one of my clusters where they go around during school hours, identify school children in uniform, then inform the education department to contact the children from the street and do what they're supposed to do. And in one operation, we picked up incomprehensible education about 57 learners as supposed to be in school. And there is more as on the street. That's one of the interactions that we have with the principal in school. The issue of deployment of the defense force. We must understand that the defense force has been deployed especially when it comes to your special season operation. So it's not correct by saying the Defence Force is not deployed in cooperation with that. This call, the call that was the attack from the leaders in the province, and I mean, I had my input, and I said this is what it is. Coupled with that, the deployment of extra resources has been referred to on in this province. The extra resources is not from any other province or any other area. The staff of the Western Cape Police that we deploy and we redirect and do analysis, and then we will do that. So it will be a continuous process. We will not withdraw the members from different areas. The station will still operate with the station strength, and these units that we have, visible policing units, the alliance squad, your TRCs, your NIUs, all of them are in the province and we utilize them as what our crime friends dictate to us. So that's clearly what we are doing. In the case of detectives, our detective capacity is what we have in the province. And we utilize those detective capacity to deal with this issue. But I hear what Dr. Colabana was saying in the issue of
investigation. I've been dealing with it. General Matope, my deputy, provincial commissioner, meet with it early hours of the morning because I can't call in during the day, so I meet with it very early in the morning to deal with this issue. And some of these cases are supposed to be cases that have been finalized, and we deal, and that's why we go out as provincial management to the station. This on the issue of investigations, and one of the issues that was referred to in most places is crime scene management. We as a province train visible police team members. You understand, detectives are trained in crime scene management. But first responders are always visible police team members, uniform members. We train them, and all the stations, some of them, and we continue the training for them also to understand how to secure a crime scene so that the detectives arrive, automatically the crime scene is secured. The issue of the spreading of the banks to the township, this is a wide concern for us. But as I, or I want to explain it this way, if young children, if young boys that are involved in this, and some of them are school children, learners, that don't go to school in the township itself, but they go to school outside of the township, in other, some of the other areas, and on their way in, they cause a lot of problems. We identify them, we work with the community, and we work with the principals and that. So that is one of the issues that we put in place to start to deal with it. Tomorrow night we have a meeting with some of the community structures in Africa to deal with the issue, because that's the only way we will be able to deal with it. We must understand if the children don't go to school, it becomes a police problem. I think the school act is very clear that children must be school under the age of 16, but who is enforcing that act? You can't expect that to really enforce the act of children to walk out on the street. Somebody has to take that responsibility. The issue of gas on street level, as we explained already, that information is coming on a continuous basis, and we deal with it. But we must understand, we arrest, we investigate, we take them to court. When they're freely in court, and it's always it becomes a police problem, and that's one of the issues. Also, one of the reasons why some of these gang problems are up and down is the release of convicted gangsters from prison also. We have a good cooperation with correctional services when it comes to the parole board. But some of them serve their sentences, they come out and they reclaim their fate. And that is also really problematic. Chair, I think I answered most of the questions unless the honourable members will want to indicate some of the questions that have been answered.
In this particular sentence, if you can maybe just repeat the intelligence issue, and then there are also the issue of the involvement of learners themselves in the program. Not adult thinking for learners, what it should be. The question is honourable to me as also, if you can respond to that one as well.
I think the issue of intelligence, the criteria is the start of that of the secret on the grand challenge issue. The capacity of grand challenge in the province, yes, we have people in the province. Yes, we need more crime intelligence officers to deal with some of the issues, and the current law is dealing with all the threats currently in the province. And yes, on the national level, there is, on the national commission side dealing and the ministers are dealing with the current problem with crime intelligence. So that is an ongoing process, and unfortunately, we must deal with what we have currently. The issue of learners, is the issue that learners are involved. I refer to the truancy project, because when learners are not at school, they get involved in these things. Maybe I must just share this one example with you. I had an interview with a girl of 15, 16 years old some years ago in this province. The girl was out of school, and she was recruited by a gang to become a safe place for the gangsters. When she wanted to leave the gang environment, they showed her a picture of the mother standing 6 o'clock in the morning at the bus stop. So this is the type of intimidation that we also take in place. But if education doesn't remove the children also from the street and not be in school, and parents don't take the responsibility to ensure that children are in school, it becomes our problem from the police side. Thank
you. I'm going to allow follow-up questions. Can I get an indication on the board of the legislature? I'm going to ask members to keep their questions concise, so that we can give as many as possible follow-up questions. Honourable Labonte, Honourable Vidalee George.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you very much for your support. Arresting ordinary gang members, to me, is like cutting the branches of a tree and leaving them there.
Thank you.
committee, I think it was under the leadership of the Honourable George when he was chairing the committee, had a visit in the Western Cape. And one of the places that we visited was Bokoot West. And at that stage, we made a recommendation, I think both of which at that stage was a participation or something like that. We made a recommendation that we said, stop looking at Bokoot West as a rural station. Stop looking at Bokoot West as a very important station where it's your smuggling route for vehicles, it's your smuggling route for drugs, it's your smuggling route for abalone, etc., etc. I mean, South Africa has shown where it goes, where it is now fighting crime. They are willing to cooperate. If you've got to have 24-hour searches in Bokoot West, then we need to do so. And it's been stopping normal vehicles in that period. Are we looking at the Secretary spoke about routes, you yourself spoke about routes, development around our coastal areas, etc. Are we looking at strengthening those stations in those areas so that they are actually capacitated to not only do normal police action, to become a deterrent for what is organised crime as well, and become a role player in that? The issue of crime inheritance, we are going to have a meeting, it is on this committee's programme, by the request of the National Commissioner on the turnaround strategy for crime intelligence. So that issue will be discussed in detail. However, for me, the answer that we've received lacks, again, the community involvement. Because intelligence is not only by crime intelligence, it's about your sources, which your detectives are responsible for. And we see when we go to stations, including the Western Cape, that detectives have very few resources. They pay out very little money to sources. What are we doing to improve that situation? So that we actually do have people from the community involved in the fight against crime, maybe even contribute towards the turnaround of the community's attitude towards the police as well. So if you can answer those questions that have been raised now as follow-up questions, then I'll close the meeting and summarize.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me start off by the Kingpin and also the High Flight project. I think we must understand that High Flight are people identified who are the sources of these crime syndicates. And that's where the DPCI plays a critical role in this. For example, about a month and a half ago, a project was terminated and people were arrested in Molnitzer, where we confiscated 20 million rand worth of data hydroponically cultivated there. So clearly it shows to you that we continue with the process of identifying the significant losses and to deal with them on a continuous basis. And that is a process that is ongoing. But our provincial command center, and everybody talks about the world, is one of our critical nodal points to link all of these cases with one another. To give you an example, we had three incidents about a year and a half ago. Three in the province, in three different locations, about 10, 15, 20 kilometers apart from one another. We pick up some information and evidence on the crime scene, specifically a cartridges from firearms, and through our linkage process, we link the three scenes with one firearm. So clearly, it was questioned, is it a firearm that was that group, or was it the people that group? We arrest the people, arrested in the first crisis, there is a lot of cases currently pending against that particular. So I just want to explain that we do have the capacity to deal with the high flyers, the kingpin, on a continuous basis. That is the one thing. The issue of the community involvement versus also the gang versus the community. But General George will understand. Facts don't buy out grants. Facts don't supply members of the community with money when it comes to their electricity or their rent in the rear. Our state commander of management in the 90s, we rented a person who is a leader in the church. He lost his job and the gang asked him to keep that in his house. We rented the person because we received the information from the community. He was too afraid to tell who the drug belonged to. He was prepared rather to take the punishment. So as you can see, and in another way, the poverty is the cause of gangsterism. What we are saying, unfortunately, these role models have the cash, have the flashy cards, they drive around. From that point, we are going
Islam says, we involve the community, but also get information from the community and from their young children. And that is for us so important to have that impact in our community. The issue of informants, I think that is a critical issue. That's why the management is going down there now. Speak to the detective. What is the reason that you don't have an informant? And you're absolutely right, but the committee has discovered it is true that there is a big space for improvement when it comes to informants. And we're currently addressing that process by going to the sessions itself and speaking to the detectives, not only detectives, but also to the visible policing members. Our flying squad members are informants. So it means we are dealing with that process. The bulk of the West and the grassroots, let's talk about the grassroots. Yes, the bulk of the West comes in a kernel station, to show you from a capital to a kernel station. And we have our operations all grassroots. To give you an example, we confiscated one of the buses that transported people in the province. Because we wrote to the bus company, we informed them about the issue of tagging the luggage. We stopped the bus, there was a piece of luggage not tagged, and we arrested the driver and we confiscated the bus itself. But what was good for us, the company supported us. Because they said, this is our SOP. They still follow us and we will deal with that. So we continuously do that. The issue of the army, currently we dealt with the problem successfully in Lavendale and Elderbar area. And what we see now becomes the placement of these gangsters. And it's not only on the Central or in the peninsula. Some of the gangsters run as far as the rural states. I was in Freedom the other day, and that's what community saying to me. That suddenly this movement of people that they never know. So when they eat too much in the peninsula, they jump out to the other areas.
Just two issues. We talk about communities again and whether that's bringing the heart and mind walk around it. I think we need to realise that there's a lot more to than big effects. There is a whole economy that we're keeping to survive around drug trafficking. The general spoken about somebody who stores drugs in their house, but the drug trade and the drug situation that the West Bank means that we also need to start looking at economic interventions from local government, from provincial government, from national government, etc., to begin to break some of the issues which tax is never going to win the hearts and minds of, because as the general said, we don't pay out money for legacy, we don't pay out that. We've got to break that economy and we've got to, there was reports about 4 or 5 years ago, where researchers were looking at the social economy of organized crime and looking at the Western Cape drug problem where basically what you had some of these drug barons or lords or whatever you want to call, almost setting themselves up as a kind of alternative to government. And we need to be able to look at having the resources to deal with that, to begin to deal with, if we shut down the drug trade in the Western Cape, if we really want to shut it down, we need to look at alternative economies for people to survive in. So it can't just be that that is responsible for bringing the hearts and minds. There was a question raised about why the sudden escalation in whether that can be seen as because that failed. I think that in the presentation that we did, we spoke about the tick issue and the fact that tick has become so easy to manufacture and the fact that when drug prices start decreasing and it becomes a competition among drug price wars, I think that's one factor. But I think there's a whole complex set of factors, many of which have absolutely nothing to do with the peace. I think my colleague has also pointed to, unfortunately they actually need to go to an IRC, but I think my colleague has also pointed to the fact that the pitfall in the peace accord, it actually can escalate conflict. Now I'm not saying that it's any single factor, but there's a complex set of factors, including if you look for a single easy win factor that is the peace accord, I think we're not going to understand the gang problem. Getting the peace accord done in October 2011 failed, and it certainly hasn't led to less tension. The escalation and the drop in the market price of manufacturing tick is a contributing factor. There would be a number of other contributing factors, and I think that we need to, if we're going to have a proper response to this, we need to unpack and understand all those issues, and not to say it was a response.
the department and the secretariat for this. I'm going to sum up. I mean, I think what's clear is that some going to wake up in a month's time and that will be the end of the problem. It is a problem that needs to be looked at in a multidimensional way at this year. And I think that's from one presentation that we received today. For me, in fact, the period is shortcoming in what is happening. So while we are doing, for instance, you know, in the Western Cape, unless you are extremely wealthy, you will not be able to send your children to a rehabilitation centre. So there are just not enough rehabilitation centres. And that becomes a problem in itself. And that becomes a problem that needs to be addressed, not myself, not the government at all. So what we are going to ask, and we would like the Department Secretariat to make note of this, one that you provide OCD report to us, can be given in 6 weeks. General Lamouk, that you give us the specifics in regard to police officers and involvement in corruption. What was done around that? How many are they supported? How many being supported and sentences? As well as the pipeline. And statistics, we get statistics around that. Also, between the secretariat and the department, we would like to have the department and the secretariat look more closely to profile and statistically chapter 4. And within a month, come back to the committee in writing to say to us where you believe it can be improved so that we can talk also to the our counterpart of justice to see whether we can't bring those amendments to that. The football night, I believe, would fall more with the 6 days. But we would like to see within the next 60 days, if we can have 2 months, if you are going to run out of time, let us know in advance. A strategy on how we can better coordinate government efforts in terms of dealing with gang issues. We've clearly heard from what General Lamour has been saying, that where we do have government interaction, it's limited to the cluster itself. Now, clearly, the cluster is actually the most irrelevant in this part. It's not about justice, it's not about correctional services, they play a role, but what is important here is your social development, your health, your education, etc. So a clear strategy on how we are better going to coordinate those efforts. And I think that itself would result in maybe a review also of the approach that we take towards gangsterism. That it does not end up being a police problem on its own, but that it becomes government priority, which can be focused on from different angles. General Moore, I think back to yourself again is from the side of stuff, we need to get feedback on how you are better going to make use of the community in the fight against gangsterism. And especially the honourable measure, but also the involvement, and I think that's the absence that we sometimes see as well of NGOs, of churches, of community leaders in this. How can we call on them and involve them also in this fight? So if we can get that also, we'll give you also an answer for that. Clearly it can be a work in progress. I mean, we don't expect you to have those answers. It's not something that's going to come working a day with you. So, members, I hope I have covered most of our issues. We will wait for those responses. And if need be, at some point the committee will decide whether we believe it necessary to have another meeting around this issue. But if we get those responses and if we can ask the department as well as the secretary to see that this becomes on the agenda of government departments who are supposed to be involved in fighting this. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned. Can I just, before we adjourn, sorry, remind members of the 5th of September of the second dialogue, also the department and the secretariat. The 5th of September, I've received calls that there's been change in the program, there's no change in the program. We are starting in the morning. I hope the members have received the invitations already. And we will finish the evening with a gala dinner. The media will also give their invitation closer to the day. So if members, please remember that. As a people members, tomorrow we have a meeting. Yes, we've agreed to that meeting, Mr. George, where we need to adopt minutes. We start at 9 o'clock. Minutes have been distributed to members, must please go through the minutes so that we don't sit here going through the minutes. We're starting at 9 o'clock. We are going to try and do as many of the minutes.
Hopefully we'll let us know where the venue will be, so if members can